Back on the game, a lot of spring football talk today. Alex Barnes addresses the transfer rumors at 5:25. Haters and Ballers, preseason Royals edition at 4:40. All the prognosticators on what the Royals are going to do this season. We're busting out that segment to find some haters and ballers, and I'll give you a little hint. It was a lot harder to come up with ballers than it was haters.
Did you pull some more music clips, or are we doing the same thing?
No, I'll just mix up the same ones.
Okay.
Don't have anything new for you today. Too busy. Mitch is gone and, like, can't edit the Bill Snyder audio for me, and that Mitch leaves, this whole place falls apart, man. It just made everything so much more difficult. Mitch is going to join us at 4:50 to hear my WrestleMania hot takes, by the way, too.
And he'll be back tomorrow, right?
Mitch should be back tomorrow.
Okay.
Yes. My disappointments from the national championship game last night. I know everybody is mad about the officiating, and I'm not saying that I wasn't bothered by that, but that wasn't the overarching thing that I'm left thinking about here today. There are two things. One of them serious, one of them not. I'll get to the serious one in a moment. Well, you know what? They're both serious. You know, this is absolutely, they're both serious. Because here is number one. I'm sitting there watching One Shining Moment last night, which I like One Shining Moment a lot. It's kind of corny, and it's the type of thing that people probably wouldn't expect me to really like. But it's a very nice cherry on top at the end of the tournament. You know, it's like the last of college football or college basketball before you go into the very dark ages, dark period here, when it doesn't come back for a long time. So I like having it. And I like when K-State was making runs in the tournament. Like, I would wait to see if they were going to be in One Shining Moment. I legitimately did somewhat care about that. I can remember screaming at my TV after I thought K-State didn't get enough love in 2010 on One Shining Moment after the Elite Eight run. So I like it. What I don't like seeing in One Shining Moment is Tyler Self. Tyler Self made One Shining Moment. That guy has done nothing but just sit on the bench for 5 years and tweet snarky things about
Bramlage,
Manhattan. I don't know if he does it for other places. I would assume so, just judging by, you know, the times that I do run across it. And yet, he comes on to hit a three in garbage time, and Tyler Self will forever be etched in those One Shining Moment videos. If there has not been, I'd have to go back and look at them all, I suppose, to say this for sure, but this is sports radio, so we basically are just paid to make declarations like this without actually fact-checking and going through everything.
Oh, yeah.
And so there has never been a less deserving participant in One Shining Moment than Tyler Self. Never. Never. It's a fact.
They even added Jim Nance's, or whoever was calling
right.
that game, they added that in it, and they were like, Self, what a great scene to see coach's son hit the three.
Yeah.
They even added that into the One Shining Moment.
The reason why it doesn't bother me is because I don't like One Shining Moment. I've never paid attention to it. I didn't watch it last night. I had no regrets about not watching it. I never go back and watch it. So it doesn't bother me that much. But I would probably agree that there isn't a player that played less for his actual team in the season but then made One Shining Moment than Tyler Self.
Because you know what? Part of the value of One Shining Moment is, as a player, if you make it into that, that's the type of thing you can pull up pretty easily, like for the rest of your life, and just point back and say, look.
And he is going to need to. He is going to need to, because he's not one of those players that can walk into any bar in Lawrence and get free drinks and everything like that. He's going to have it pulled up on his phone ready to go.
He's getting free drinks.
Look at me.
No,
look at me.
He's getting free drinks in Lawrence. I don't think he has to worry about that. I think he's sort of a cult hero, beloved type of figure.
You sure?
You know how the walk-ons even here are treated. Like, Austin Budke gets a lot of love when he's coming into the game. Like,
I don't think he's getting free drinks.
Remember, like, Alex Potajac when he was here? You don't think, like, Potajac would have gotten free drinks when he was going to the – this is going back to the Frank years, but
– Row letter?
He would have gotten free drinks. I would have bought Ron Freeman all the drinks that he wanted when he would have strolled into a bar. Yeah, plus he's the coach's son. You know, on top of just being a walk-on, he looks kind of like a weird version of Bill Self.
Yeah,
so,
but they want to fire him now.
Well, okay. But he's going to be fine as far as that goes. But it did take away from the joke that I was going to crack. I was debating either going seriously and challenging you on whether or not Tyler Self would be able to get drinks or just dropping my, well, once he goes pro in something other than sports and is working his, you know, accounting right. job 5 years from now, yeah, that might be a nice thing to be able to flip back and point out.
Sure.
That that does a little bit more than being able to show the tax form that you just filled out from somebody.
Yes.
For somebody.
Totally with you
so,
on that.
So, you know, Tyler Self's got that, and that's what drives me nuts because, you know, Jake and Denny, I think, both made it. But, like, I'm not sure that Curtis Kelly got in one shining moment. I'd have to go back and check. And, like,
Samuels.
Curtis Kelly, man. Curtis Kelly deserves to be in that a million times more than Tyler Self does. The injustice of Tyler Self being in one shining moment is just ridiculous. So that was my first disappointment from the national championship game. I'll let you handle the officiating part of it because everybody was really upset by that, and it did bother me. They clearly changed the way that they were officiating things in the second half, and Gonzaga got in a bunch of foul trouble, and it slowed down the game. It made it less pretty to watch. I would submit to you that the two teams just didn't play all that well anyway, and they factored more into the game feeling like a slogfest. Officiating did, but there was some of column A, some of column B.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, I was just disappointed that the game turned out the way it did, and that's part of why I was so upset with the officiating. I wanted it to be a great finish, and I thought it would be a great game originally because it had a really rare matchup that you don't see very often in the NCAA tournament. The best overall team, and I mean, these are subjective, but the best overall team, in my opinion, was North Carolina. And the best overall season, I think, was Gonzaga. I think they had the best season of any team in the tournament. And because of how crazy March Madness is, most of the time, those two things, those two worlds do not collide for the national championship. But we had that in this game, and I thought that that would mean that we would be rewarded with a great game that went down to the wire and everything like that. And this one kind of did, but at the same time, it just fizzled out in the final 30 seconds and just wasn't great basketball, but the officiating was a big part of it.
And it could have prevented Gonzaga from winning the game. Like, I wouldn't sit here and totally dispute that because guys like Zach Collins were in big-time foul trouble, and they're really skilled players. Gonzaga's entire front line seemingly was in foul trouble. And then Williams-Goss has the ankle thing late. There was a lot that worked against Gonzaga. I do think North Carolina was the better team, and I think if they played 10 times, North Carolina is going to win a majority of the games. But Gonzaga was certainly capable. They belonged on the floor, and they had a chance to win that game. And the reason I was disappointed is because I thought the compelling aspect of that game was that Gonzaga could put the bow on this big comeback out of, not comeback, this big Cinderella story. They could have put the bow on the Cinderella story that started almost 20 years ago when they made that first run to the Elite Eight just out of nowhere when Dan Monson was their coach, and that's what put them on the scene. They made a regional final, and darn near went to the Final Four. And since then, they've just been to the tournament every single year, year in, year out, making runs. The riff on them was that they could never win the big game even when they were a high seed and actually get past the, you know, just the round of 16, the Sweet 16. They had their struggles doing that. They had finally broken through that. So I won't take anything away from them for doing that. This was a big step even in their story to actually make it to the Final Four in a national championship game. But at the same time, it's a story that deserves a championship ending.
Yeah, I mean,
it's such a great college athletic story. What Gonzaga's been able to do, what Monson started, what Few continued, how they've pumped out some NBA players, how they've, you know, just been there year after year after year. Their tournament streak is in the top five of teams in the country right now. Like, they're nipping on the heels of Kansas almost with that. They deserve to have the nice, neat bow put on it with a championship.
Regardless of the fact that both teams were one seeds, don't let that convince you that this was not a David and Goliath story. I mean, you just look at the resources that North Carolina has and their national brand and Michael Jordan being, you know, the face of that school and Roy Williams and all the success that he's had. I mean, this was the fourth straight decade that North Carolina has won at least one national championship. And so I did look at it as a David and Goliath thing, and you're always going to pull for David in that case unless you're a fan of Goliath. And so, yeah, it would have done a lot for me, and it would have made me respect this tournament a lot more had Gonzaga won, because overall, just tournament-wide, it wasn't great in terms of intrigue and buzzer beaters and everything like that if you're not following every single footstep of Frank Martin.
Yeah, and there are were people doing that? there are a lot of talking points with, like, North Carolina winning their sixth title, Roy Williams winning his third. I think that's really where a lot more of it goes. Like, you know, if you're a college basketball junkie, I suppose it's somewhat interesting to debate the merits of Roy Williams versus everybody else, but just like ultimately I'm kind of, you know, who cares? Like, yeah, right. Roy's really good. There's like five coaches in the same echelon as he is of college basketball coaches, and you could really parse all their accomplishments and try and figure out what order you want to put them in, but I'm not really that interested in that. I would have rather seen the great ending to Gonzaga's story, and I think there's even some parallels to like K-State football and the K-State football turnaround story here, because the story is great. Gonzaga, K-State football, no matter if they have a championship or not, they're a power either way. Gonzaga is, and K-State football, maybe power is too strong of a word right now. They certainly were for that run of 6 or 7 11-win seasons. Still an established football program. Either way, I guess is probably a better way to put it. And they've proven a ton that they don't really need to do anything to just back up how amazing the runs have been and the stories are. But they both feel like they deserve the national championship to just be the nice end and the completion of the story, to write that final chapter. And unfortunately for both, they just haven't been written.
I think that part of that is because of the resources that they have. Like, they've done absolutely everything that they possibly could with the resources they have. But I've often said that K-State football, I think the difference between them and winning a national championship is being, you know, one or two elite players away. They've got so many good players, but they haven't had those five-star guys. And I think that you could say that a little bit about Gonzaga as well. They've got a lot of really good players, but no one that's, I don't think, is going to be an NBA All-Star or anything like that. And maybe if they had one more of those guys, they would have won the national championship.
Yeah, the interesting thing with that is that North Carolina, part of the reason I thought, you know, they matched up fine with North Carolina, like, this is not like a Kentucky team, for instance, with just one-and-done talent all over the place. North Carolina's had a handful of those guys that have been around for a few years, a lot of similar faces. You saw K-State play 2 years ago at Sprint mm-hmm. Center. This has been a different type of team for Roy Williams than like John Calipari style, or what I think most people would assume for North Carolina. But you're right about Gonzaga too. Yeah, it's not all fueled by five-star guys, though they certainly get their share of players, and they're doing all right. All right, coming up at 5:25, Alex Barnes. He'll address the transfer rumors from this offseason, plus talk about the injuries that held him out last couple of games of last season as we talk more spring football. But when we come back, the return of Haters and Ballers, this time Royals edition, here on The Game.